Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I remember being like, well, how is this going to work with this show? How are we stretching out this relationship? Like, what? Because we had to make it alive and sexy and interesting, but also we couldn't commit to it. Like, we had to play this ambiguity all. And I remember that very much in season one.
My name is Anna Silk. For 6 seasons, I played Beau on the hit TV series Lost Girl. I am so happy you are here for the Lost Girl Rewatch podcast to take a trip down memory lane with me, the amazing cast, and some very special guests. I'm so glad to finally be able to say the family is back together again. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Lost Girl Rewatch podcast, where we are discussing episode 4 already. Can you believe it? I am very excited today to introduce my co-host. Oh, gosh. I will get through it without crying. I'm sure I will. I'm very happy that he is here. My co-host for today is one of the kindest people that I know. Oh, man. He has astonishingly handsome good looks, and his heart is wide open. Dyson always held so much life lived with a sense of danger always present in him. This character, with whom I will feel a lifelong connection, was played by the spectacular Chris Holden Reed.
Yay!
That is the nicest intro I have ever had in my life. I'm going to get it.
Oh my gosh, Chris, this has been an emotional roller coaster for me.
I bet.
Like, yeah, it really has. I'm so happy to see you.
You too.
And we're both here.
Pair of glasses now.
I know.
You're getting more beautiful. I lost the beard. The audience is going to know who the hell I am. They'll be like, that's not Dyson.
Actually, you are a bit of a shapeshifter when it comes to all the different roles you play. Rachel and I were talking last week about, I was like, did you ever see the one where he had his hair slicked back and had a big, like, sleazy mustache? And I was like, I liked that look.
Oh, that was a dirty show. That was The Bridge.
Yes, it was. It was The Bridge. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That was a dirty show.
I remember we were all at John Fawcett's in his living room watching.
That's right. Oh my God. That's right. Because I did the pilot with that. And then I jumped on the next pilot with him, which was Lost Girl.
Lost Girl. Exactly. And here we are.
Him to thank for getting me in here. And our amazing audition chemistry. And that broken wall.
And that broken wall. Oh my gosh. One of my favorite audition experiences, for sure.
It's got to be.
I think it's number one. It's the step of legend.
Yeah.
Do you remember, maybe we talked about this before, but do you remember after our screen test together, you drove me back to my hotel? Mm-hmm. You had this tiny little car, I remember. And it was, I remember you had to scrape the windshield. It was that time of year.
It was in the winter. It was that time of year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you drove me back to my hotel and we were kind of saying like, oh gosh, like, I feel like we might get these parts, but like, you know, actors can't really ever say that because we never know.
You can't hope. Don't let your hope get too high.
I know. But you did. You drove me back to my hotel. I remember.
Yeah. Well, we needed after that, like we all put ourselves out there pretty hard for this. Like we were trying.
We did.
We kind of needed a little bit of like a, how do we do? Are we okay?
How do we do? Exactly.
It's like, is this going to happen? Maybe.
I know. And I had never met you before until that audition room.
Absolutely. And for those that don't know and who maybe have never heard the story, the audition was one of the sex scenes. Like they needed to see us. So it was like, it was actually, so our pilot episode was what airs at episode 8 in this show in season 1. And it was that scene where she shows up at the door all wounded and is like, I told you I'd never again or something like that. And he's like, oh, come on, Dyson, one more time.
I love your reenactment of us. And do you remember filming it? It felt like filming a fight scene. It was exhausting.
It was brutal. And my God, that is actually one of my funniest sex scene stories because I remember the gag was, I was above you. I had to roll you up in the frame and the cut on your neck had to come into like a close up or like, and heal, CGI heal afterwards.
Yes.
And I remember you were on the bottom. We were both wearing nothing. Like you had that thing and I had that thing.
I know the thing.
And my thing doesn't cover that thing. And so I just.
My thing doesn't cover that thing.
No, oh God. And it was like I was bent over top of you with my butt up in the air and the entire video village of producers is behind us without
they
a flag.
They were behind us.
Shielding like from my naked butt.
Oh my God. I didn't know that. I didn't want to be on top and you didn't want to be on top. Oh, and now we know why.
I just like watching Vanessa Piazza back there behind the monitor.
Do you know what else about that day that you might not remember?
What's that?
It was my birthday.
Oh my gosh.
It was my birthday that day. That's like, I mean, how could I forget? It was my birthday. Yeah. And I'm like, I am naked on top of Chris Hilton Reed filming this pilot. I know. Oh my gosh. So many memories. So many memories.
I couldn't remember that. No.
I know. It was a great, the whole thing has been great. And now here we are like 12, 13 years later.
Going back.
And we're going to talk about episode 4, mm-hmm. which is called Fatal Attraction. Mm-hmm. It was written by Jeremy Boxen and directed by Steve DeMarco.
And was this the first episode that Steve DeMarco had directed?
I think it was. I don't remember for sure, but if you're remembering
sure.
that too.
That was number 4. I think that's when it came in.
Yeah. And boy, can you see it, right? Yeah. In the performances.
Yeah, he got into that. He loved our show.
He loved it. He absolutely loved it. Anyway, my first question for you is, how did you feel watching this episode and what were your first impressions?
It was amazing to remember, actually. Like, my first impression was, God, Dyson's grumpy. He's just such a, what's his problem? Lighten up, dude.
I actually loved that about him in this one.
Well, that's what I was going for in the beginning. Like, when we first started the show, like, you know, with Michelle and like the premise was really dark. We were going for kind of a darker, mature, funny drama, like, you know, sexy sci-fi drama. And so I felt very like I could go in that direction, which isn't very typical TV direction acting. I remember KC when after a couple of first days of acting, he's like, dude, when I saw you acting, I didn't know what you were doing, man. Like, honestly, I was like, what is this guy doing? And then he saw some of the rushes. Cause remember we used to all hang around in the production office and actually watch the dailies while we ate our lunch. Yeah.
I remember they brought this new couch in. It was from Cindy Crawford Designs. I don't know why I remember that. But I remember us sitting on the couch watching dailies.
And like how luxurious, like that never happens anymore. Like,
yeah, because usually they won't let us.
No, exactly.
And actually it's a bit of a slippery slope to let actors watch dailies. And for people listening, dailies are what you have basically filmed in the previous
days. The day before, yeah.
Yeah.
I think for us though, it was tremendously educational because we saw what the show was and like, it was almost always you, Ksenia and myself just sitting there studying the show and studying performance interaction. And
also honestly, it gave me a sense of the world we were in.
It really did. Absolutely.
Like, all I knew was myself in it, you know, yeah. But it gave me a 360 view.
And how we could position us and like where we could push, you know, and like, but yeah, I was pretty dark and grumpy Dyson. Well, he was in love with Bo, but he couldn't show it. And it was just,
I love that. So this is the part, and we forget this, but we were like super into each other in season one, you know, and many seasons after that, of course. And it develops.
Dyson was always super into you, but like, you know, then the Norn came along.
Oh, I know that bitch. No, but it's, I love that. I love this episode. I love that the theme is sort of rejection. Mm-hmm. You know, Bo and Dyson both feeling rejected. Jenny, ultimately the character that the guest star, amazing guest stars.
She was terrific. Yeah.
She was terrific. The guest stars are, I mean, they're always amazing. And these ones in particular, she was incredible. Mm-hmm. Kristen Pellerin, I think was her name. I love the sisters, the Furies. I love your line. Furies always have sisters. Like tells you so much about the Fae world. Just like that, you know?
Yeah, it was really nice to see how, you know, that the writers were the savvy and that we were able to, you know, those little stepping stones of building the reality, right? Like,
yeah,
I was always, I remember in season two when our new showrunner showed up and he was like, what do you think your job is on the show? And I was like, my job is to make reality real. You know, like, make the Fae world real. Dyson's real. So is the Fae world. That's my job. And I felt like that was really what we were doing in season one, just like making that world tangible and like.
Yeah. And the writing, you're right. It was stepping stones, you know, like we found like just all the, you know, up to this point. So we've, as a family, we have watched episodes 1 through 3, just so you know, for your memory, Chris, the end of episode 3, Bo goes to the Dalriada to profess her newfound love for Dyson, and she walks in on Dyson making out with the waitress. That's where we ended episode 3. So episode, just in case you didn't see that or remember that, that's why there's this tension, extra tension between Bo and Dyson in this episode. But I loved it. I loved seeing Dyson, like I loved seeing him deal with big feelings.
This is the start of it. Yeah.
And he won't. I always love seeing you and Hale in the cop shop. The cop shop is one of my favorite places.
Casey's so good. Like, honestly.
So good. I know, but I love seeing you like at the case board and talking, and you just don't want to say it's about Bo, you know? Oh, and you breaking that guy's arm was so gross. It's so gross.
It's not gross.
I know. It's just the sound. Yeah. It was gross. But I like that Dyson is so clearly affected.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously I love both of the scenes you have with the therapist and just where one starts and where the last scene, which we can talk about at the end, but it's one of my favorite moments for you ever, I think.
It's a good moment. Just,
yeah. It was nice to see Dyson so vulnerable, frankly, you know, extra vulnerable. I also loved seeing, I loved seeing Kenzie and Bo in bed in the beginning with Kenzie with a popsicle, like all of that stuff.
So great. Like, yeah,
it was so great and so much fun. And I had forgotten all of that, of course. Yeah. And the smashing of the car, which we had so much fun doing, which
I remember watching you guys do that because it was all on that set the same day.
It was the same set as the farmhouse, right?
Yeah. And like we
could only do that take once.
Yeah.
Because we were smashing windows.
Yeah.
You know, so we really had to be careful of that. From my memory, we shot it once. Maybe we didn't. Maybe they replaced windows. I don't know. But yeah, I love seeing all of that. And I also like seeing one thing I noticed in this was Bo starting to sense the rules of the Fae world. Like she makes some kind of comment like to Kenzie about like, we can't, oh God, what was it? Now I'm forgetting. But just like, oh, we can't tell Jenny about that they're Fae or whatever. She wants to like tell Jenny what's going on.
Right, right, right.
The point being is that Bo is starting to find a sense of order. Like she's starting to understand, like, I kind of have to play by some of these rules so that I can live by my own, you know?
Yeah.
Which I thought was really great.
That was a really great sort of arc of season one was Bo's finding her place and like, or, you know, that it's really the origin series season, right? So like all of those things were just so fun and like really grounded, you know. It was like these are real situations of like someone having to figure it out. Like that's why that season one was just like there was, you know, it was there was we weren't jumping the shark at this point.
We weren't. No, we weren't. And I feel like, I mean, season one is going to be probably our most special season in a lot of ways. I have other seasons that I particularly enjoyed as well, but there's something special about season one. Also just in the storytelling, we definitely had a case of the week feel. But we had so much rich storytelling around the relationships that it never felt like there's a few episodes in the first season that feel just like a caper, you know, like we're on the case and there's not a lot of relationship development, but we just had a friggin' good time, you know. What is your best memory of filming this episode? Do you have a specific memory or memories?
Well, it came back in a huge flash when I was. Oh wait a minute! No, that's the next episode, right?
No. I know it's hard to keep them straight. It's hard to keep them straight. That's okay.
Just watch them. In this one, there was a couple scenes at the bar. Mm-hmm. That I was like, oh yeah, just, you know, you get the visceral real memory and the cop shop too, because at that point it was just like getting like that had to be Dyson's base. And it was like you guys had the house, right? Yeah. It was like, we had to make it our own and get, you know, feel alive in it, feel part of it. And I remember gelling in a couple of those scenes there and just like feeling like, oh yeah, okay. I'm getting the cop Dyson now. But yeah, I remember being at the Dow when you picked up that other couple. It's like,
I know. I actually loved that whole sequence. Like I like Bo and Kenzie are out for girls' night out, right?
That was terrific.
And I loved that. Like it was a long time that Ksenia and I were sitting there and Bo's kind of spinning around on that bar stool and Lauren comes in and has her moment of, which is like, you know, so magnetic because it's Zoe Palmer and she's amazing. Yeah. And then the couple come over and then Dyson walks in. I love how Bo kind of in a very teenager way, like walks by him and snubs him. Mm-hmm. But I just remember that whole sequence. And I remember sitting in that spot for so long and just having so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember being like, well, how is this going to work with the show? How are we stretching out this relationship? Like what? Because we had to make it alive and sexy and interesting, but also we couldn't commit to it. Like it was, we had to play this ambiguity. And I remember that very much in season one. We also shot very much out of order. So as I remember we were doing.
Which made me crazy, by the way.
Absolutely. For you, hats off to you about how you did it.
Remember they'd give us notes and it would say like Bo and Dyson are doing this, like they had a fight, now they're back together, but they're kind of mad at each other. And it's like, okay.
So we were always kind of struggling where to place our performance. And like, I remember oftentimes we just had to do a kind of ambiguous sort of like, just laying it out there so that it could be interpreted either way.
Yeah. But, you know, it speaks to chemistry. Mm-hmm. Also casting and also, you know, writing and all of the, all those other things that have to happen. But what the reason I'm thinking that, Chris, is because we were talking about our audition and I was thinking like we had never met before walking in that room together, but it worked. Why? Mm-hmm. We didn't know each other. I'd never spoken to you ever. You know, like why did it work? I don't know what the answer is. There doesn't have to be one, but you know, in terms of right, just,
though. I mean, it's chemistry is such a, you know, there's so many different parts of it, whether it's, you know, the intellectual side, there's whatever it was, we both knew what we needed to do. And it was, thank God it was on par with each other, you know, yeah. we were both serious. Like we both yeah. wanted that role. Like
we did.
I don't think I wanted a role more than Dyson. Up until then, probably never. After that, maybe, you know, a couple times. But like that was the one that I was like, this is the role that I can make do better than almost. I just knew it. I was like, this is in my guts, this role.
Yeah.
And it was the first time actually that I in an audition when I'd done my own audition before they brought us in, where I actually vocalized that to whoever, I think Vanessa and Jay were in the room and
Jay has told me that story.
Yeah.
Someone has told me that story. I think it was Jay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, look, I know you want to really, you know, I know you want the macho good looking guy, but I can do this role better than anyone. Like I just basically said,
this part, you know what, there's, that's valid to say. I mean, you knew it. Also, you're not exactly hard to look at. Chris Holden Reed. But I do know what you were saying. And I think it's good that you vocalized that because why not?
Like, yeah, why not? Right?
I mean, when you feel something, like, why not?
Yeah. So, and then they put us together. Remember? So, and we shouldn't mention who, but they paired us with two, you know, there was,
yes.
I couldn't believe they only brought in.
They brought two Bows and two Dysons, but frankly, who knows what went on? Who knows? The day before, they may have had seven. The day after us, like, we never know. We always think it's like just us and one other person, but like, you never know. But there was only four of us there that day, and they sort of mixed and matched. Yeah. And it was interesting. It's interesting how we're talking about the audition, because I think what comes up is just us both recognizing, even in watching this episode, the Beau Dyson dynamic was so special. You know, and so strong and mattered so much.
That was one, you know, there was those key relationships in the show. Right.
And
this show actually had a lot of them. Like we had our group had such, you know, it was an ensemble show really with you as the main lead. But I mean like and this was the brilliance of the writing team is that everyone had through lines. And good interconnections with each other. Mm-hmm. Like Dyson and Trick had some great stuff.
Oh, Hale, you guys had great stuff.
Hale and Kenzie, you know, and Lauren with everybody, you know, Lauren's, you know, and even then.
Everyone was fully fleshed out. There was nothing.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. I know. We were so lucky.
We were so lucky.
And I think we knew we were lucky, which is, I'm glad that we knew it then, because mm-hmm. it's important to know that. I also remember the whole farmhouse sequence at the end, which with the rolling of the head and the explosion and all that stuff. I remember that enjoying filming that. It was a really long sequence, and the Furies come in and all that stuff. I just remember enjoying that time on set, even though it took us a very, very long time to film. One of my other best memories of that episode is the scene between Beau and Dyson at the end, though, on the couch. It's so mm-hmm. sweet and loving. And okay.
You were amazing in that because, like I said earlier, Dyson, you know, he's been a bit of a grumpy little, not sure what to do with himself, how to place this, who's this new girl? And you brought that so much life in there and acceptance. And like, you totally drove that scene. And like, I was just so happy that I/Dyson had you to act to bring that to that scene. Cause that scene could have been a bit catty, you know, this is, it could, But it was just so,
you know, the theme of that scene for me is when Bo says, I forget exactly what she says, but she says something, 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 and I trust you. Mm-hmm. You know, she just has this, I trust you. And she means it through and through. And you can see Dyson is affected by that. I just thought it was so beautiful.
It was. It was a really great written scene. And honestly, you brought so much to that. It was it was lovely to watch for the first time.
It was lovely to watch. Most difficult or challenging thing about filming this episode?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Anything come to mind?
This one didn't have a lot of tough stuff for Dyson. He was mostly just kind of, well, I guess, I mean, just being that sort of, I don't like being that dark shut off kind of guy. So doing those scenes, like whether it was with the therapist or, you know, with Casey Hale, you know, where Dyson's just like shutting everyone out, like pushing him away and like, no, push. That was, as I was watching it, I was like, yeah, that's a part of myself that I don't like.
You know, what's funny is that if you, Chris Holden Reed, you don't like that, it's actually maybe that conflict that makes it work so well.
It's
compelling to watch.
Yeah. And it worked. And it's interesting though. It was like, I was also kind of the style of the show, like the style of the hair and the beard and stuff. It was so, it was so big. Like it took Sandy was our brilliant hair guy. It took him and I like season 3, I think Dyson came into his own, but I was just looking at myself. I was like, I'm a poofy haired, like it's a bad haircut, like bad beard. There's really
not. It's funny that you see it that way. I don't see it that way at all. I have commented a lot on my own hair for this whole season. Yeah. And Sandy was incredible. I do think I had particularly good hair in this episode.
You do.
I had a good mane. Like, I liked all the twistiness that he did. You know, it was kind of interesting and flattering, I thought, for Bo.
He did some bits. I remember just seeing some of your hair designs with the wigs and stuff, and like not the wigs, but like the extensions and stuff. Mm-hmm. I just was like, wow. And sometimes you come out just like, like some of your warrior stuff. I think that was like later on. Oh no, that was I think even in the pot in what we saw as episode 1, I think, where you're like fighting that big.
Yeah. Yeah, I had some pretty awesome hair, and it was kind of warrior-like. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of like center braids.
Yeah, the big center braid, very Viking-esque.
The long hair. I know. Yeah. I know. Hair. It's important. It's important. I feel like the most difficult or challenging thing was definitely the threesome for me. Although I do love Bo saying, you know, I think we're going to need a safe word, because it kind of shows that she's enjoying her power. Mm-hmm. In a safe environment with other Fae. But it's hard to film. I mean, it's always weird.
I know.
Lovely guest stars were nude and I was mostly nude. And I made out with more people in season 1 than ever than any other season. So that was just, you know, another day at the office for me, but it's always a little, it was hard to watch, you know, in the rewatch. I was like, oh,
and this is what one of the things that clicked on me too, in watching both these episodes back to back was just how much skin time you especially, but like we definitely had to have.
Yeah. But we got it down. By the end, we were just like, we got this.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. we're absolutely each other's education in cinematic sex scenes.
Yes. But we knew, one thing we knew, we were always going to be really well lit. I took a lot of solace in that. You know, David Green, who was our DP, who was incredible, who just made us look so good. He made us look good. He made the show look good. He really lit the people, you know, to look very cinematic. And
he won the award, I think, that year for season one.
I don't remember if it was for season one, but I do know he's won many awards. He's an incredible, incredible DP. And we were so lucky to have him. Yeah. What worked or what didn't work in this episode? I think we've talked about a lot of things that worked. I have the same answer for both.
That's a tough one. You go first.
Okay. And you don't need to answer every question. It doesn't need to have an answer. And this is me really digging for an answer, by the way. The headless guy with the remote in his hand, to me, it looked kind of funny. And so I was like, oh, maybe that didn't work. And then I was like, but also it looked so kind of funny that it did work. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like it had a bit of humor. Just my memory is that DeMarco stuck that remote in its hand. I don't think like that's his kind of the humor of it. And that's what made it work for me.
I struggled with, we hadn't gotten our fight stuff down yet very well yet. And it was like, all those interactions, they needed, for me, that I was like, that needs more tuning, you know, whether a better rehearsal or, you know, it took us a while to get our fight stuff down.
It did. I mean, I feel like we never had enough time ever. We never had enough time to rehearse something for me, over the whole series, the fights that worked best for me were like the kind of fast and dirty ones where it was like, Bo has like, there's four hits and it's done, you know, cause it looked really alive for me as opposed to trying to learn how to sword fight in a day and a half. And then suddenly, and like, it looks a bit lazy to me. Like I, you know, cause that's not a skill that I have. And even with incredible doubles that I've had over the years, like it just, I always liked it better when we kept it simple for me. You're a really good fighter.
I had some good scenes, but even in scene one, season one, it was also just figuring out the way we were going to shoot it on Law School. Right. And like, it's time for people to like kind of get on board of how we're,
there Stop was it. Some that took a while to work out, I think.
It really did.
Yeah. I think that did show on occasion. But I think, you know, I think overall we did pretty good. Any behind the scenes memories or secrets from this episode? Oh no, what? Do you have one? I'm scared.
Yes, no, it's not appropriate.
Staying
a secret.
It's a what?
I'm saying it's staying a secret.
It's staying a secret. Oh my gosh. Everyone listening, I will try to drag this secret out of Chris Holden Reed maybe when we're done filming and maybe give you a clue.
Behind the scenes stuff, it was the first time working with DeMarco, and I had a difficult time with him in certain ways because he treated the women and the men very differently. And like, he was like downright rude to me sometimes. And like, just like, and I was like, hey man, we're all trying to do the same thing here. You know, I didn't like DeMarco at first and I found him I didn't like anyway. So that was the biggest struggle for me on that episode was actually getting to work with DeMarco, and it took DeMarco and I till season two, like maybe three episodes together to really, and we had to have a sit down at some point. I was like, hey man, this is how I work. And he was like, well, this is how I work. And I was like, okay, well, we got to find some common ground. You know, and he had his issues. So
He's a force beyond anything else. But right. I feel like for me personally in that season, he was a bit of a lifeline creatively for me because I just felt that he lit some fire that I needed. And that was the first, and it was like, I think I wrote in a tribute to him that, you know, he would pull the rug out from under you with one hand and then lift you up higher than you ever thought possible with the other.
That's nice.
And I felt that with him, you know, like he would do that a lot, and it was jarring. And sometimes it really pissed me off. I'm not going to lie. But in the end, as a creative, I needed someone to kind of grab my shoulders and shake me. And so, he was a breath of that for me in that episode. One of my behind the scenes memories that it's funny to watch it. Cause you know, the opening scene of this, episode is like the end, right? Like that's the first time I think we did that, where we play the beginning and then it comes back, the barn exploding and Kenzie and I running. And I remember on the day the barn actually exploded. And then they put like extra fire in post.
Yeah.
But there was going to be a real explosion. So what this means for everybody listening is that there's a lot of people standing around with like special effects and like detonators, and everyone's hiding behind things that protect them. And so, and then Chris is there with the car, and then Cassetti and I are there, and we're like, okay, they're going to call a 3-2-1 action. And I just remember, you know, we have one take and we got to run. And I remember they called 3-2-1 action, and Cassetti and I booked it. I mean, we were running so fast. We were like literally running for our lives because we knew that it was going to explode. And it did blow up. Yeah. It was so invigorating and scary. So I just remember that so well. And the other thing I remembered watching this, there's the scene in the lab, Lauren's lab, where the Fury is like losing her mind, which was so sad actually to see.
It was pretty dark.
I know. but then you're there. You come in with the ash, right? Clay Bennett, right. You come in and he's got his incredible voice. And the whole scene happens. And then he would look at you and say, Dyson, let's hope your performance, let's hope your performance improves. And he left. And we could not stop laughing because I think you don't say anything in that scene. Right. So the joke was that it looked like he was trying to tell you, like, you better do better in this scene. Like we were all laughing is what I remember. I can't remember exactly why, but as actors, we were cracking up at that line. And I think you can see a little twinkle in Clay's eye when he says it, because we'd been laughing a lot doing that.
Which we never did otherwise on set. I mean,
never. We never laugh. We never had any fun.
We had so much fun on this show. Like, honestly,
We did. And I mean, look, the experience of it has really led to doing this podcast, because it has. It has an audience still. It has a young audience growing, to be honest. I meet a lot of young, new fans. And frankly, I feel from watching this first season, the way that I've been watching it, is it's kind of timeless. The only thing that sometimes happens is tech stuff. Like Dyson has a line at some point in one of the episodes where he says like, humans, you know, you take away their big screens and their minivans. And I was like, big screens and minivans, man, like that's so old. But it was kind of cool at the time, right?
We're all on flip phones in that season.
Yeah, I have flip phones and stuff. Like that's the only thing that kind of looks dated to me. But I feel like the show is timeless in the, you know, the storytelling of the sci-fi element obviously is timeless, but the relationships and why they mattered and why they mattered to people watching. So on that note, Mr. Holden Reed, we are going to wrap up episode 4. Thank you so much for joining me. It means a lot to me that you are here.
Thank you very much for having me and for doing this for everybody. Honestly, thank you guys for tuning in and both watching the show and watching this.
And watching the podcast.
Coming along on the journey with this crazy little family.
I know. Family first. Thank you, everybody, for listening to episode 4 of the Lost Girl Rewatch podcast. We will see you on the next one. Today's Spotlight is a tribute to director Steve DeMarco, who passed away in December of 2020. Please join me and the cast as we remember him. What Steve DeMarco brought to the show was everything.
Unbridled passion.
Edginess, intelligence, and vitality.
He could make you fly.
He brought humor. He brought passion. He brought
a wheelchair.
Energy.
Oh my gosh. He brought excitement, energy.
A creative, wild energy.
An energy, a sense of adventure, and a deep sense of caring about the the actors' performances. Like, he cared, and he spent the time to make sure that everybody was on point, and just really, he cared. Sorry.
Fearlessness. Fun. A lot of fun. And therapy.
It is hard to put into words and articulate what Steve DeMarco meant to me personally. Because, of course, there was both the professional relationship that I had with him on set that also sort of morphed into this beautiful personal relationship that I had with him. And I think the wonderful thing about Steve was that he was able to marry those two relationships while also keeping a beautiful boundary, which is something I have not mastered.
He was the personification, the epitome of the, you know, he was so profoundly dedicated to telling that story with everything in his being, you know. I really, that's what I was left with every time I worked with him, you know. He was always 100% there with us, with the show, with the story. He was like a fierce.
Oh, here comes Steve, the crazy guy with the crazy look and the crazy way of working.
A wheelchair with the camera rigged up. He actually got the people, the grips and all those guys to rig up a little monitor on the wheelchair. It was so much fun.
And I think if I had to say, though, the number one thing that I really loved about him was that, you know, you sort of, and it was a real lesson for me too, because you sort of saw Steve and he's like tatted up and often wearing some sort of leather contraption, and you could have an assumption about who he was. And he was really the antithesis of that in a way. He was a complete teddy bear.
He loved that world. He loved getting in there and, like, you know, mixing it up and being crazy. I mean, like, most people won't know Steve, but he was 6'3", always had his head shaved on the sides with a big silver mohawk, tattoos all over, wore Prodigy leather gear every day with big strapping combat docs, and, you know, like, he was in things. He had like barbed wire tattooed all around his neck, and like he was an intense dude. And he brought that, and he found in our weird little family a home for that weird intensity.
Steve was like, he was like an embodiment of what that show was about. You know, he is like very Canadian, really wild, very creative, an actor's director, and just had that gothic punk, didn't give a fuck kind of attitude, which, you know, a lot of the show embodied at times. So,
and I have a theory that he was Faye, because there was something so unique and different about him that he must have been Faye who came in to, you know, bless us with this positive energy.
Everything that Lost Girl was and became really was in large part to what Steve DeMarco was able to bring out in the actors.
And he just created this beautiful environment where I think we all had the chance to flourish.
He brought you into his world, and it made you feel so big and so important that you could go in and walk on set and just nail it.
He also was so supportive with us actors. He was a really fuck the man type of person. I'm here for you. What do you need? I'm your advocate. I'm your voice. And I don't think I've ever worked with another director like him in that same way. And like, yeah, I'm so happy that you're keeping his memory and spirit alive. Yeah.
I mean, thinking about what to say about him today, I wrote a tribute to him on Instagram after he passed away, and I feel like I would just like to read it. Steve DeMarco was a force of nature. To say he supported actors is an understatement. He supported me and supported the character I played like no one else. He was a tornado of creativity that ripped through our set and left a community of very alive and happy actors in his wake. He would pull the rug out from under you with one hand and lift you up higher than you ever thought possible with the other. And even though his exterior reflected a man who did not want to be challenged, he did want to be challenged. He wanted to dig into everything with everyone. And when he smiled, that real, beautiful, boyish smile, I felt every bit of the warm, caring man that he was. I lost touch with Steve after the show ended, and I wish I hadn't.
We wouldn't have been the show we were without him.
I really miss you, Steve. I wish you were still here. The world is a little less magical without you in it.
Yeah, Steve was he's special.
Steve's figured it out. He's figured out the formula, and no one else could keep up.
Rest in peace, sir. Forces of nature don't die. They transform. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Lost Girl Rewatch podcast, which is produced by Anna Silk, Rachel Skarsten, and Seth Cooperman, with theme music by our very own Blood King, Rick Howland. Please rate, review, and share the Lost Girl Rewatch podcast. This enables us to grow and to continue bringing you exciting new content every week. If you don't already, follow us on Instagram and on our YouTube channel at Lost Girl Rewatch. You can also subscribe to Patreon for exclusive bonus episodes made just for you and get early access to all of our episodes.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.